Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Migration and Diaspora podcast with me, your co-host, Aha. Today, we are joined by Kimo Kamara, founder and CEO at OMEC, to tell us all about the different faces of the African diaspora. But first, a bit about Kimo. Kimo is the founder of OMEC, a community-centric platform whose mission is to amplify the talent, the voices, and energy of biculturals of African descent. Kimo is a social entrepreneur, community leader, economist, and public speaker. He has held extensive leadership roles and responsibilities in community organizations and co-founded many businesses and nonprofit organizations in both the United States and Europe. Kimo has more than 15 years of experience in leadership and managing for multinational corporations, including banks and multifactoring companies. He is a firm believer in representation and equal access to opportunities. His passion lies in activating our collective human potential. That's why he enjoys bringing people from different backgrounds to work together towards a common goal. Kimo believes that the potential of the bicultural talent, especially those of African descent, is greatly untapped and underestimated. And if unlocked, will create empowered professionals who are meaningful contributions to the economy and culture of their host countries. Kimo has lived and worked in cities across the continent of Africa, States, and Europe, and has a BA in Business Administration and a Master in Development Economics and International Studies. Today's episode is all about understanding the different segments of the African diaspora and how policies and initiatives can best engage them. I'd like to thank Kimo for joining us today and you for tuning in. Hope you enjoy today's episode. Hello to everyone tuning in and welcome Kimo on today's episode. Super excited to have you with us today. Today's episode will talk about different segments of the African diaspora and our understanding of the African diaspora and how that subsequently impacts the way that we engage with these different segments, be it from a policy perspective or from a project perspective. Before we dive right deep in, Kimo, something that we love doing at the Migration and Diaspora podcast is to ask our guests about their own diaspora and migration story. So please, Kimo, if you could go ahead and share about your story.
First of all, thanks for having me. Excited to be here. My own migration story. First, it started off like a very linear thinking. You know, I was born in Guinea and spent half of my life there and the other half outside the country. So as I was growing up in Guinea, I decided that I wanted to go outside the country to pursue my education, specifically in the United States. And so I had this really linear thinking that I'm going to go to the States, I'm going to get the best education, I'm going to learn everything about capitalism system, go on to the best school, then get the best job experience, and one day come back home. So I will be able to sit at the same table as, like, you know, anybody that's coming from like IMF, World Bank, and all that stuff. So we can have a discussion. Like, I had the same experience. I went to the same education, same school with you. That was my linear thinking. So it started out with like really straightforward linear thinking. So that's why I found myself going to the United States, where I did university education and then started working in corporate America for many years. So yeah, that was good. And a few years ago, about almost 7 years ago, my wife and I decided to pack our stuff and with our kids at the time, our younger kid was 2 years old at the time, to move to Germany for a job opportunity that we had. And so we both quit our job, went there, and my wife actually had the job opportunity. And then for me, I decided actually to pursue my education. I saw this program in development and economics and international study. I decided to do that because that I actually felt was a missing piece of the puzzle. When I moved to the US, understand like this linear thinking that I had, I'm going to go to the US and get the best education, the best experience to come back home. And so it still was part of the piece of the puzzle because in the US, I work in the financial industry, in the banking for a long time, then in corporate America for a little while. But at the same time, was always a community building. When I was in the US, I used to call myself a corporate guy in the daytime and then the community builder in the nighttime. And so when I came to Germany and then saw this development economics, I felt like, oh, development economics is a missing piece of the puzzle because I have a community building, community leadership, leadership experience from the corporate space, finance background. And now I wanted to get an economics background. So I will be able to move a country or community or people from point A to point B. So I did that there. And after 3 years in Germany, I had this like idea, this result, and then for my thesis. which turned it into like an idea to do something with the diaspora community, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, we'll talk about this.
Yeah, it became the genesis. It became really the genesis of OMEC. And so after 3 years in Germany, then my wife and I decided to start something like OMEC. We'll move to Amsterdam to start that. And so we'll pack our stuff again with our kids, two kids at this point, to Amsterdam. So yeah, so we went Guinea, United States, so Guinea, New York, Minnesota, Germany, Nuremberg specifically, and now in Amsterdam. We've been a nomad. So that's a quick overview of my migration journey.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. It's really apparent how your different experiences between corporate America and community organizing, but also the different localities that you've mentioned, has really shaped the work that you've been leading at OMEC. And that's actually something that I want to start with, really diving into the work that you've been doing and really starting at its genesis. So you've led a piece of work doing a psychographic segmentation of the African diaspora as part of your master's thesis. And for those who might not know, psychographics is a term that's commonly used in marketing that is simply a study of specific consumer-based that is based on psychological characteristics and traits such as values, belief systems, goals, and attitudes. And from a pure marketing and product perspective, it's commonly used to know how to better engage with a specific segment of the market and how to tailor products that make sense to them and that are best tailored to them. And this, of course, can be applied beyond pure marketing. And this is exactly what you've done with your study, which is a study that's been based from a study that came out of Harvard Business Review, which segmented the diaspora at large into four categories. So they hadn't applied it specifically to the African context, which you have, which I found really interesting. So could you tell us briefly about the different segments that came out of this segmentation? So I believe there are four categories. So briefly, what are the four categories? Who are these people? And why are they segmented in that way? And also how you've applied it to the African context and subsequently in your work at OMEC that you could also tell us more about. So what is OMEC and how you've sort of transposed the results of this research into building OMEC?
Yeah. If I can give just a little more context to this for the listeners so they can understand. If you look at the diaspora community, specifically the African diaspora, right? The African diaspora is group so far, I think most of the diaspora actually have been looked at from geographical profile. Mm-hmm. And so if you apply that to the African diaspora from the geographical segmentation or the geographical profiling, you have two main groups. You have the classic diaspora, and then you have the contemporary diaspora, or you had to call it like the continental diaspora. So you have the classic diaspora who like left through slavery.
Exactly.
And so like African-American, Caribbean, I said that left like really. And so there's actually the original diaspora. That's where the African diaspora term started with. And so again, with that, it's always a specific thing. And then you have the continental or the contemporary diaspora. Just get really attached to the continent and recently moved like less than 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and if you look at each of these diaspora, you got like a contemporary diaspora, you have a Nigeria and then by country. So it's basically geographical profile. You're from Nigeria, you're from Ghana, you're from South Africa, you're from Uganda, you're from Rwanda. And so if you look at the classic, you're African-American, you're Caribbean, you're this. So that's that profiling. Mm-hmm. And so that's really good because you can connect with someone based on your country of origin. And so there's another way of looking at it too, which is the psychographic segmentation. And so basically what that in the basic term is, you are grouping people not based on their geographical profile, you're grouping them based on their shared mindsets. Do they have a shared value? Do they have the same mindset? So do you hear this term like-minded? Mm-hmm. Like it's a literal term of like, can you group people based on their shared experience? Do we have a shared value? Do we have the same mindset? Do we have the same way of thinking? And so once you do that, and that is a different, it's like really an alternative of like approaching the African diaspora. And so that's the study I found that when I was doing my thesis and then I went through, I'm like, oh man, this like with my experience in the African diaspora, I try to like replicate that with the African diaspora. And so basically the psychographic segmentation, what it does, one of the biggest advantage of it transcends a lot of the norms that come with the geographical profiling.
Yes.
It's like, it could be like, oh man, we are from same country, but we don't have the same religion. We're from same country. So there's
tension. Different diasporas.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, I'm calling the noises. The psychographic like segmentation transcend all that. And so if you group people based on their mindset, so there's a four category. The third category from the African diaspora perspective, you have the one that I call the cultural advocate. Yeah. So the cultural advocate are like the first group of people that move, let's say from Africa or from the continent or the country of origin and came to the West to provide support and for their family. So basically in the migration. So a lot of this group or this segment is like did not advance, or some of them didn't even go to school. And so in these places, they're like working, blue collar worker, they work in the farm or like factories. And basic for them is to work, save money, send remittances and support the people back home. And so a lot of them have been here and for a long time and been in the West, have a family now, and all they do is to work and provide for the kids. And so the mindset with this group is basically one, they're like really, really versed in the culture. And so that's why I call them the cultural advocate. So they speak the language really well. They have like these dresses. And then the weekend, they go to churches or to the mosque and they come together and for baby naming ceremony, for social. So it's all about social support. That is the mindset. And then the second group, I call them the ethnic affirmer. And so this second group are basically usually, I also call them the aunts or the aunties. So they left the country. They were like engineer or they were like professor or like they were like a really intellectual that left to like go to the West. So like, hey, I'm going to go maybe make a better life for my family. And so a lot of the time with this group, when they migrate, let's say they came to France or Germany or in the US or Canada, usually they don't translate the education or the job experience they had in this country. And so they ended up being like a cab driver. For instance, if you look at the Canada or like the US, the yellow cab drivers, or they have an ethnic store. And some of them like are able to translate, but not a lot of them are not able to do that. And so these uncles like usually are the one who are like these community associations. They are like the head of the association. They're always involved in the political aspect because they were educated back home. And so that education aspect is still there. So like really, really political. And but they really cling to that culture because the West hadn't welcomed them so well. Mm-hmm. And then so they really cling to their culture. And sometimes they're more African than those on the continent. So there's like that, the mindset they have, like really political and then like really separated the two identity. The Western identity is always like, no, I'm African, period. So they could have like the passport or, but they really separate those two identities. So they have a different mindset. And so the third segment here, this one, the group that I call the bicultural. And so the bicultural are basically the kids from these first two groups. They were born or raised in the country where the parents are residing.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the culture. They were born there. They were educated there. And so this younger generation, more involved, averse. This is their society. This is their culture. So their culture and their experience is different of that of their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so another thing with this generation, like especially in Europe here, when I was doing my research with them, what I realized when they were growing up, they're like, there's this dichotomy. They're like really trying to stay away from the African culture and then trying to completely assimilate into their birth country or the dominant, I don't like to use that term, but like the majority culture they are in. So it was like two culture clashing, I want to run. And now where they are in the 20s, 30s now, educated, successful, trendsetter, you know, creative, and they start like really reconcile with their African identity. And so like that, there's a huge movement within this generation now to like cultural identity. Who am I? My bicultural, that's where this really bicultural identity become interesting. Because what before it was this dichotomy, this fight between the two culture. And now it's like, no, these are my two culture within my identity. I'm gonna embrace the same thing. And so that mindset is totally different. This generation is a generation that's gone now. It's like changing narrative. They don't want to put up any more of the social inequality. They want to create the change and now, like yesterday. Mm-hmm. So that energy is like really, really different that of the other first two groups. And so the third group, the fourth group now, I call them the assimilator. Assimilator, the fourth group, they're usually like very, very well educated and very extremely successful for most of the cases. And so for one reason or another, multiple reasons, they are completely disconnected with the African culture, with the African community. And for them, like being successful in the society where they're in, mean they have to completely assimilate within that society. And so they usually like completely not involved in the African culture, African community, or doing it in their own way. So that is a group that's the fourth group. And so each of these group have a like really different mindset. The assimilators are like really of the mindset of being successful, as a mindset of like adapting the Western culture and then like going at the highest level possible. And so they're always focused on moving forward and focus on like building this and then successful and then this. And so like those are totally four different mindsets. And so the problem become, you look at the geographical profiling, what happened is like all this international institution, all the policy that's been usually done for diaspora engagement from the geographical profiling aspect, you put in all these four different mindsets, these four different groups in the same bucket, and create policy for them to work. An assimilator and then a cultural advocate just don't speak the same language. I don't care if they are from same family or same village or same community, they don't speak the same language. They don't think the same way. And so if you put them in the same group, African descent, and then with the policy, it doesn't work. That's why usually there's a lot of these noises that I mentioned before within the African community, because if you take an assimilator and then a cultural advocate or like a bicultural and then a cultural advocate. And so even if you look at like a lot of these bicultural have like a hard time getting along with their parents because they don't have the same
value experience. System.
Value system. They don't have the same experience. They were not raised the same way. This younger generation from here, they were born here. They're not scared. They're like American, they're like French, they're Dutch, they're Canadian, like anybody. So it's like really... That's what I'm saying. The psychographic really helped transcend these noises with the geographical profiling.
It's so interesting. It really does. And even when we were talking about the different kinds of diaspora, the contemporary and the historical Black African diaspora, I think, I mean, for anyone who's part of the diaspora, we've heard of diaspora wars, African American versus African on the continent. Even growing up, perhaps in the States or in Canada, there's usually this difference that's being highlighted. And I think that having a segmentation that goes beyond the geographical location is in a way sort of a starting point to like unite the diaspora in a more, I think, in a more logical way as well, because you'll have African American people from the diaspora that actually want to contribute to development on the continent. And they've often been excluded from diaspora engagement policies because they're not specifically from Rwanda, for example. If you look at diaspora engagement policy in specific countries, they'll go directly to speak to nationals or people coming out of a specific country, and perhaps people from Afro-Caribbean descent or African-American descent are not going to be included in these policies because we just don't think of them as part of that specific kind of diaspora. So I think this kind of segmentation is very interesting. And as you were speaking, I wondered if there could be a further segmentation or perhaps a small distinction within these four categories, because as well, if we look at diaspora engagement initiatives or strategies or policies, for me, there seems to be also two broad categories. So one that is mainly focusing on enabling and supporting diaspora members in their own, in their host countries. So that is often the case with initiatives that will promote entrepreneurship or networking or job opportunity in the host country itself. So for example, you in the Netherlands, you know, supporting African Black entrepreneurs to basically thrive and be successful in their host countries. And then you also have those initiatives that sit within the migration development nexus, the diaspora for development nexus that they also call, which is mainly how the diaspora can contribute to the development of their origin country. So how to support development goals. And that is often looking at initiatives that look at the potential of remittances, how to best channel diaspora investment and skill transfers, you know, between diaspora members and the local population. And of course, there are initiatives that also look at both types of engagement. And I think for me, that distinction is also very interesting because we might all have a shared diaspora identity, but people might be more concerned with supporting their communities where they are right now, versus other people might want to look back and say, okay, how can I contribute now that I'm more stable here, now that I have capital to contribute back home? So for me, I see this as another further level of segmentation. And I wonder how that plays into the four segments that you've described, because you could also simultaneously have someone that's a bicultural that's also interested in development goals, or cultural advocates or affirmers, and vice versa, people that might only be interested in developing their communities in the country that they're in at the very moment. So just wondering how you also see this segmentation perhaps in the work that you've led. And also, second question is, as you said, you focus on the biculturals at OMIC. So perhaps why have you chosen this specific segment, and how does it look like to engage them?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Maybe I'll start with the last one and then I just get to there, because I think the first question is more actually the engagement aspect.
Of course.
That you call like engaging the diaspora or the nexus of diaspora and development, right? So I'll start with the first one. The reason I selected the bicultural as my target audience for all, and understand, like I mentioned earlier, like I have over 20 years of experience in community building, actually like doing community building my whole life. I was born in a really large family, just to give it a context of my background, a large family. So I grew up seeing my parents build community. I grew up in basically the community, like of people, a lot of people in my compound and friends and then community members, and then seeing this work done even before I understood what it, but that for me, that was the default. That's what you just do. And so when I was in the US, I was a community builder at night, all kind of community. So I done all kind of community building where I understand the noises that come into geographical community profiling. And so with the segmentation, I realized, wow, this is amazing. Like if I speak the same language, when I say language, I mean like the same way of thinking with someone, whenever we come together and all these noises, it. I don't care if you're from Rwanda or like from Guinea, or if you're from African American or just Caribbean, it really doesn't matter. What matters us together as a people of African descent, there's these challenges and we want to change it. We want to change the narrative. We want to build the table, like all these terms we keep hearing, like build our own table, then create the change that we want to see. That's the most important. So that's why for the diaspora, for the cultural, they have this drive of creating the change. And for becoming a real creatable social change. And so they have the drive. One, that's extremely important. Second thing, these bicultural have the skills and an experience and know-how because they grew up in this society. They are well educated in this society. That's where they grew up. That was educated. So like they right now are the terror. They are like social influencers. These are the creative, these are the musicians, like they are the one art everywhere, like they are entrepreneurs. So individually, they are successful. The thing that's missing in the equation is they almost feel like this black box where they live in, where they don't see each other. So because they have this energy, everybody's doing their own thing. And for me, when I was doing my research and I was talking to these people from US to Germany, to France, to the Netherlands, to Belgium, and I started realizing it really doesn't matter continent or country or region. People of African descent, this bicultural of African descent, same drive, and then making the doing the same thing from ballroom to classroom, anything in between, doesn't matter the level of education, of expertise and experience. They all want to create a change and they want to see other people. And so for me, like, if you create a space where you remove this black box and all these people can see each other and they can see the work that they're doing and they can start coming together, and then you normalize that connection and normalize the collaboration, the sky is the limit because they have everything that is needed. They have the drive to create a change. They have the experience, they have the skill, they have the expertise, they have the knowledge, they have the technology, they're like just native of like all this digital technology that's happening. And so that's one part. That's really the reason of speaking biculturals. But think about it. When your biculturals start coming together, they start making this change, the place they live in, the country of residence or the country they live in, the country of where they were born. But at the same time, they're going to do this with the country of origin, to use this term. And because they're entrepreneurs. And as an entrepreneur, you look at where's the opportunity, you look at where's the gap, and you try to provide solution for that, their thinking is not the same anymore as like the way diaspora and development nexus work. No, like the thinking is totally different, which is a modern thinking. I can elaborate on that a little bit, but I want to focus on the community aspect. So once you bring the bicultural together and you bring that, you harness that energy and they start working together and they start you making connection and collaboration normal for them and they start creating the change that they want to see. What happened is that this bicultural, I told you earlier, they are in this cultural journey. They want to find out what are the cultural identity, the African identity. They really, really like, that's why like African history is hot right now, because people are really, there's like a lot of research. People are really interested. These people want to understand. But guess what? The cultural advocate and then the ethnic Afrimer, basically their parents have this culture. They speak the language. So when you tell the biculture, when you tell this segmentation awareness within the community, everybody understand the different segmented in, and then they start biculture are going to start respecting this cultural advocate to say like, hey, these are advocate for your culture. So if you want to respect your African culture, you need to put these people on the pedestal. You need to like highlight these people. They're guarding the culture. This is with the people that we go to like get culture. So now the bicultural, instead of fighting with this, they start respecting and they start meeting this group where they are and they start learning from them. And before you know it, the cultural advocate and the ethnic affirmer now are feeling that this younger generation are respecting them and are seeing value in what they have. And so before you know it, the noises that's really spreading and they making this group fight, and now there's a respect for each other. And now each and every single one of these group are growing. And now little by little, what's happening within the community is like the community is getting better and the community is coming together. And there's these noises that are like removing within the community, and this misunderstanding is being evaporated within the community. And so that's why for me, the bicultural are like really a key essential of moving forward, if that helps.
And yeah, I love how you've sort of drawn possible synergies that exist between the different categories. And for me, I mean, as we've sort of said, biculturals are sort of the younger generation. So thinking along the lines of intergenerational community building, knowledge sharing between different sets of generation, and ultimately perhaps the desire then to contribute back home now that you back to the country of origin, with that increased understanding perhaps is also something that I guess.
Yes.
Something that you've seen in your research, sort of the shift from sort of the community building in the country of residence to, okay, now that I know my language, now that I sort of know more about my country's history and how do then I can translate sort of this drive and this energy elsewhere. Have you seen that as well, the biculturals, and perhaps also synergies between the different groups, right? How have they collaborated? How can they collaborate to also, as you said, maybe like go beyond the migration development nexus? It's not just, it can be a very narrow sort of understanding of how diaspora wants to engage. So maybe if you can touch on some of the synergies that you've seen in your own experiences and your research.
Yeah, absolutely. Not even the research, the community. I mean, if you look at
the day-to-day work.
If you look at the OMEC community, we are full of like this bicultural, talented, successful, entrepreneur, creative, like you name it. And so basically that's what I'm saying. Like, This is the second part of your question, the development nexus aspect of it. Mm-hmm. It's a different way of thinking from the biculturals. It's totally different way of thinking, like in terms of like diaspora engagement. What is happening right now, this generation really doesn't even like think about the next, the way diaspora engagement is happening right now is transfer. No. That's not how we're thinking. That's not how we're seeing it. That's opportunity to go and build something. Yeah. And then we go on and make it happen. But we're doing it between the two continents.
I really like that. And I think, as you mentioned, sort of going beyond the diaspora for development nexus, I think is super interesting, because as you said, the biculturals are perhaps not even wanting to engage with development or the development project.
Absolutely not. Yes.
Becoming critical of the development space. And it's perhaps not a space that people want to formally engage with, as perhaps some of the development engagement policies are sort of set out, right? It's very narrow. It's very much an engagement with specific institutions. And perhaps that's not something that's appealing to a group of people that I'm hearing is also perhaps more creative, more innovative, wants more freedom, and perhaps want to contribute to change, but perhaps not within formal institutions or sort of traditional ways of, you know, building community and development, and might want to recreate or rethink development in different ways and contribute to it in more creative ways, more innovative ways. So I think I really like that because it's sort of moving away from that. And there's still this connection. There's still this return or this movement between the different homes, but perhaps it doesn't have this targeted goal of, oh, I'm going back home with all the skills that I've have built in the West, for instance, and I'm going to contribute. Which brings me to my next topic, which is basically talking about the paradoxes of privileges, right, in the diaspora engagement space. And I think this is changing. This is what I'm hearing through what you are saying is, I think sometimes the diaspora is often looked as a potential solution to a lot of development problems. And I'm speaking from a very narrow diaspora engagement policies that we look at, almost like a potential savior. I mean, we've seen it with the whole remittances argument, how there's billions of dollars that can be tapped into the diaspora, and how if there's a way that we can channel this fund and somehow we can finance development. And that's also coming from a very narrow perspective of the diaspora, as you said, assuming that everyone wants to contribute to development, that every diaspora member is a de facto development partner, which it's not, it's currently not the fact. But I think also going on the sort of the topic of privilege, I think there is still tension when it comes to this idea that diaspora are coming home with these skills and this wanting to contribute. And there's actually a very interesting article that went viral on Medium a few years ago. I don't know if you heard about it. It was from Malawian author. Sorry, her name is Priscilla Takondwa. And her article was named Dear African Abroad, Home is Not Waiting for You. And basically in it, she describes how unwillingly, unfortunately, some of us in diaspora have adopted sort of a saviorist attitude. And she quotes, which I think is very interesting article, at least when it was released at the time, was quite relevant and timely. Mm-hmm. She says, home can be this ill-spoken place that you constantly defend, so that in a sick and twisted way, you begin to breed in yourself a sort of savior mentality. Home can become this distant thing to be saved. Home can become a wild, unraveling epic in which you cast yourself as a heroine for desiring to return. But who in the world are you? More is the humbling realization that home has not been waiting on the edge of its seat for you to arrive, arms held out in waiting for something you could never possess to give. Home is as dynamic as ever, bending, breaking, reshaping itself, and self-correcting. It is brimming with possibility. Possibility you have very little to do with. Of course, there's a lot to unpack in this. I think, I mean, we can agree or disagree on some of the statements in this quote, but I think mainly for me when it came out was really this realization that it's true, that home is not waiting for us. The continent is not waiting for us in the diaspora to come and share the skills that we've developed or not in the West, because home is doing its own thing, right? It's dynamic. And the only thing we can do is really join in this dynamism, as you were sort of describing how the biculturals are sort of moving around, jumping on opportunities, right? It's really sort of jumping in and contributing, as opposed to this assumption that somehow everything is to be found in the diaspora, and even this top-down idea of skills and knowledge transfer from the diaspora to the continent. So I thought that was an interesting sort of way of seeing it, and it's also sort of good to hear it as well from you. And when we think of moving beyond the diaspora development nexus as well, so.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. It just brings me back because I told you I did my master in development economics and my thesis was about the diaspora. So like this diaspora engagement, diaspora development nexus, and then this is I spent almost a whole year like into this space. So I understand this. Where does this come from? Where does this idea come from? Like think about it. When you take a step back, this whole process of development or engaging, this has been the way in the past. Like, if you think about the diaspora approach, you had diaspora as like this concept of this school of thought of brain loss, or like brain gain, brain loss, and then the brain circulation. And think about how that used to happen. If I was on the continent, I was from Guinea, I moved to the US, then that's it. I'm completely cut off with the continent. There was no phone calls, no transportation. There was no nothing. I had absolutely no contact with my family and they had absolutely no contact with me. And so that was the way in the past. So that was the idea of a brand. And so like all the policy and then like emanating from those days and then thinking. And then now like the things have moved so far, the technology.
But the policies remain the same.
The policies remain the same. And so like, if you don't understand that aspect of it, then you kind of like, wait, who is this things targeted to, friend? So I think for policymaker, there's a need of understanding this segment of the population, because the way the world is now, the diaspora, the bicultural are like the largest segment. They are going to be the largest segment, because think about it. The other two segments are their parents, right? So this is like the younger generation that's growing more and more and more. The society is going to be more of these people. And so it's changing so fast. So like institutions really need to understand this community. These are the future of the diaspora. So like all these people that's involved in the diaspora work right now are like really getting older. Who are they going to pass the torch to?
I think there's definitely, in terms of policy making, I think there's a shift that's really required and a better, but also a different understanding of diaspora making. And I think, a shift to perhaps a psychographic segmentation, as you sort of propose, I think is definitely required, because you'll even see when we talk about understanding diaspora, a lot of diaspora mapping studies are done. And they are based on the geographical location, right?
Yes.
A mapping of people in Botswana. It's very much in this narrow thinking based on geographical location. And this is still how the space operates, and ultimately how policies then are drafted based on research from a geographical segmentation. And I think, there definitely needs to be a shift towards perhaps a value-based segmentation, as you propose. And I think this is an invitation to policymakers, perhaps that are listening in today, to perhaps engage with your work. And that brings me, before we close, to maybe talking more about OMEC, because we've spoken about it, but not in great detail. Can you tell us concretely, what does OMEC does? We know that you engage biculturals, you support them, you connect them with opportunity, but exactly how do you do this? And just to close as well, I know that you've led some exciting events through OMEC. You know, you've mentioned an African Diaspora Summit. You've also had an African Diaspora Collaboration Summit in 2019. I know you'll be celebrating Africa Day towards the end of the month with what looks like a very exciting, I don't know if I can call it a summit, but a few days of exciting events. So
cultural festival.
Yeah, a festival. Okay, cultural festival. It's not a summit. Can you tell us more about OMEC, what you guys do, and perhaps your key events and what's coming up that we can sort of look forward to?
Yeah. So OMEC, in the nutshell, I think we've been like a referring to it for the whole time. Yeah, is a community for bicultural of African descent. And the idea is to make a connection, just normalize connection and collaboration with them. Mm-hmm. And I already talked about like the advantage and then the drive, the value they have and then everything. And so for me, because OMEC, the genesis of it is like, my personal experience of growing up as a professional or African diaspora professional in the US and now Germany and here, but also the academic aspect of it. And so building this space to remove this black box for this bicultural, energy driving, talented bicultural to come together and then to create the change that they want to see. Like it's built specifically for this community. And what we do is really normalize. And this term is really important, like normalize connection and collaboration. So if you're bicultural of African descent, you should be able to go to OMEC and find other bicultural anywhere, anytime around the world. So
there's a form you can subscribe. And is there an online platform?
Yes. Yes,
you have a profile now.
We recently launched our digital platform,
which is beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So you should definitely join if you haven't, for anybody listening as well. So we have the digital platform. So basically what that allows you to do, once you're there, you're part of this global bicultural community. And so if you live in Canada, you should be able to say like, hey, I'm a creative. Or I'm a photographer. Mm-hmm. I want to find all the photographer in Amsterdam. So I'm going to visit Amsterdam. Or I want to find all the photographer in Montreal. It's like I live there. So like you should be able to find bicultural, like-minded people anytime, anywhere. So that's the first thing we do, like normalizing connection and normalizing collaboration as well. So when people connect, they start to talk to each other. Once we start talking to each other, we start building rapport. Once we start building rapport, we start building trust. And once we start building trust, then we start thinking about collaborating. And so we want to really normalize that process where people start collaborating between each other. like I said, like we've done a lot of this, the people in the diaspora, collaborating with people on the continent, within the diaspora, within the, so we want to normalize that. And then we provide them tools and resources and everything that they need within that community to turn them into change catalysts. And some of the things that I'm doing right now is like I'm building these master classes where I want to create awareness about the power of that diaspora identity, bicultural identity, I mean. So it turned into three different master classes where the first one is to like understand what bicultural identity means. And to the point by the end that you understand like your bicultural identity is a superpower. And the second master class will talk about now that's a superpower, what does that mean? How do you flex those muscles to really be able to leverage your superpower, just like a soft skill that you have that you can use, this competitive advantage that you have. And so that's the second masterclass. And the third masterclass, now that you realize this superpower that you're flexing that muscle, what you do with it, what's your role and responsibility in the society, basically building this awareness to turn diaspora into active change maker. So those are some of the things that we do. And then we do a lot of events, networking event to bring people together. We work with like global companies, multiple global company, international companies to connect people with like those opportunities, but also like figure out how do you authentically engage with community and then build community. So like completely rethinking this idea of a diversity and inclusion within this space. So we're doing that. So people, but also like a really in the sector of like entrepreneurship, creative, basically coming together and it's like empowering, not empowering, but like a, giving the, our diaspora is where they can empower each other.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. So again, this is, you mentioned the event that we done. We do this annual diaspora summit. And now this year, this is the first year where we're like extremely excited that our annual summit, we move it into the Africa Day, which is May 25th. And most people don't know this in the community. So we want to use now OMEC as a vehicle to make Africa Day a mainstream thing for bicultural to really know what Africa Day is, where it's come from, and then celebrate it globally. So a couple of few years from now, we want to make Africa Day like, yo, the coolest day in the world, owned and then run by the bicultural. So this year we're collaborating with, again, you know, the bicultural community organization to turn this celebration into a cultural festival. So it will start on May 25th and it will be 5 days summit from Wednesday all the way to Sunday. It's going to be dope. It's going to be a hybrid event where we have like this conversation between the global diaspora from the continent to like to Asia, to North America, to Europe, like really this conversation. But we also have a like evening concert. We'll bring in Mulatto, for instance, from Ethiopia, which is the father of a jazz. And so that concerts are happening, event activities, lunch, and then, it's just a festival to run celebration, commemoration, the whole 5 days.
Amazing. I look forward to tuning in virtually. Unfortunately, I'm not in Amsterdam to be there in person. But listen, Kibo, it's been so great connecting. Thank you so much for this conversation. I mean, I've learned so much and it's been amazing. Before you leave us, can you tell us how we can connect with you and be part of the OMEC community? You've mentioned the digital platform. I mean, we'll provide the link as well. So it's on OMEC on your website. So is it OMEC.com? Where can people find you? Are you active Facebook, Instagram? Where is the place where people can really truly engage with you guys?
Yeah, so you can find our website on MyOMEC.
MyOMEC.
Yeah, myomec.com. And so there you can see all the activity. That's where you can really learn about like the work that we do and then also register. I would really strongly encourage everybody to join the platform now.
Yeah.
We've been, for the past 6 months, I would say 8 months now, we've been really piloting on the community, and then post-summit, we're going to start growing. So it's a time now to join the global bicultural community. So you can learn about that. And we are also very active on Instagram.
Okay.
So it will be my_OMEC. So once you type on Instagram, my_OMEC, you will come up. And so you can follow us there as well. And there you can see all the post for this event and just be up to date on things that we do. We also on LinkedIn. So if you type OMEC, it should be able to come up on LinkedIn. So we also post a lot there. So these are the three main places that we have.
Amazing. Listen, Kimo, it's been amazing again. Thank you so much for your time. And yeah, so many insights to be shared with our listeners. And I hope everyone enjoyed this conversation as much as I did.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This has been a really, really good conversation. And then I hope like people learn from it. And then if you have any question, find me on my OMEC, but also you can find me on Kimo Kamara on LinkedIn mostly. So yeah, just reach out. Happy to have a conversation in this space. But if there's one message I want to leave the listeners with, it's exciting time to be a bicultural of African descent. It's exciting time to be a diaspora, African diaspora. It's truly an exciting moment. Like, things are happening. The community is, there's a lot of exciting changes, innovation happening within the community, specifically the bicultural community. You are not alone anymore. This idea of you don't belong here, don't belong there is now, it's in the past. Connect with other people that have a shared value, that think like you, and then you see how many successful people are out there, and then the changes they want to, they are already bringing to the society, and the level we are thinking and creating the change, the way we are thinking, this movement is happening. So it doesn't matter if it's an OMEC community or it's a different community, find your community to join. You are not alone anymore. Be part of this movement, because the train already left the station. This is happening. So it's an exciting moment. It's an exciting moment. It's a privilege to be alive right now.
It's really exciting. I couldn't end on a better note. Again, thank you so much, Kimo, for being here with us today. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Migration and Diaspora Podcast, powered by Homelands Advisory, your independent migration and diaspora agency. If you've enjoyed the show and would like to support our channel, please feel free to share it or leave a review via your preferred podcasting platform. You can access the channel's full archive and show notes by visiting homelandsadvisory.com/podcast, where you can also get in touch if you'd like to be on the show. Thank you again, and see you next time.